Good evening. The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. McManus?
7:35.
Thank you. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on March 14, 2018, faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and the Express Times, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school, and finally faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. McManus, may we please have a roll call, sir?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Present.
Mrs. Brennan.
Present.
Mrs. Brooks.
Present.
Mrs. DeMurley. Dr. Foy.
Present.
Mr. Malloy.
Present.
Mrs. Olasky. Mrs. Redagata.
Present.
Ms. Grant.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Brennan, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Malloy, will you serve as the process guardian for tonight's meeting, please?
Yes, I will.
Thank you, sir. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the monthly board meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. Today is Monday, March 26th. I'd like to start tonight's meeting off by recognizing a group of staff members that have worked exceptionally hard for the district over the last 3 to 4 months. So on behalf of the entire Board of Education, I'd like to thank the district's maintenance and custodial staff for all of their hard work this winter to ensure that all four of our campuses were clear and safe for our children and staff as the snow kept falling and the ice kept forming. I believe that our area had probably over 25 inches of snow, and that's probably a very low estimate, this winter. So they were very, very busy. They worked throughout many of the days, full days and nights, and sometimes throughout the early morning hours as well. So once again, on behalf of the board, Dr. Fiandra, if you please thank them for us. I'd like to thank them for all their hard work and dedication to the district. At this point in time, I'd like to move on to the Superintendent of Schools report with Dr. Fiandra. Dr. Fiandra, please.
Good evening, everyone. And at first, I'd like to introduce our special guests. I had the privilege of being a judge in the great energy debate. And while I had a hard time focusing because I was actually so impressed with how these children researched, how they could think on their feet, how they could teach me so much about energy from a family of coal miners in Pennsylvania, it was just fascinating. So I asked Ms. Dominicus if they could come and present to the board, and she said yes, they would. So I thank her. She's been a science teacher for 3 years. She's taught social studies and computer science, and I think she'd be a marvelous debate coach if she ever wanted to be. So with this, I would love to, where'd she go?
She's behind you.
I'd like to present a wonderful science teacher, and she's going to introduce her students. Enjoy the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me first start off by saying thanks to the board for allowing us the time this evening with a busy agenda. Thanks to the superintendent for inviting us over and for coming and witnessing the energy debate. I did extend the invitation, and we had many of our fellow teachers, child study team, support services, and vice principals show up as well to be our guest judges. So everyone's had an opportunity. This is the second year that we've done this, and it's definitely gotten better this year than it was last year, but you learn new things every single time. And then I also want to thank Judy and Mr. Carfley, Judy Hammond and Mr. Carfley, who got the chance to come out and see the debate in action and are here to witness these guys. I want to take a moment to thank the parents that brought these guys out tonight. This is an exceptional group of students that has volunteered their time and their enthusiasm for you guys tonight in order to kind of recreate our debate game. So they will be explaining and introducing a little bit about how we did our energy debate and then providing an example for you. And then lastly, you guys rock. Okay? We're given a challenge on very short notice, and you guys definitely stepped up and above and beyond. So I want to thank you guys in advance. I know you guys are going to knock it out of the park. So we're all excited to see that. Before I get you guys into this, this was going to be a long process for them. They were going to be researching for the better part of 2 weeks. That's kind of boring and tedious at times. So to get them psyched up and to get them ready and anticipating this actual debate that we're putting together, I threw a trailer together for them so they can kind of see and kind of get excited about what we're going to be doing. Kind of mouths watering and ready to go and kind of jump into this and do the research a little bit more with more fervor. Train of thought's gone. All right, I'm going to just kick it to them. I'm just going to introduce a couple of our students right now. They're going to kind of give you a little bit of a rundown, and then they'll be introducing the rest of our panel, as it were, okay? So Perna and Imani.
Hello, my name is Imani Walker, and this is Prana Shankar. In our science classes, we have discussed the source of energy which is better for the world. Our topics were solar, wind, coal, hydropower, petroleum, uranium, natural gas, biomass, and geothermal energy. Over a period of 2 weeks, we have prepared for the great energy debate. In the first week, we researched our own topics, which included finding ways to promote ourselves and preparing rebuttals for some of the disadvantages we might get called out on. The second week, we researched other topics, focusing on their disadvantages. This way, we would have enough information to make a detailed challenge on our opponents.
On February 26th, the game began. There was an initial round one where each group shared some information about why their topic was a good source of energy. In the following rounds, we had the chance to either continue promoting ourselves on the game board or challenge an opponent. We had to make sure that whatever we claimed was backed up with sufficient evidence or we could get challenged back. This game also forced everyone to listen to each other's evidence and claims. You can only promote something one time. The next time you promote, it has to be on a different topic. At the end of the game, we realized that there are so many advantages and disadvantages to all the energy types, it was hard to choose just one. This is why the debate is worldwide and is still being debated today with no evidence of stopping.
To start, we will demonstrate a mock first round. Each team will introduce their names and topics. They will also get the chance to promote their topic about one thing. As introduced, I'm Imani Walker, and this is my partner, Olivia Maylock. We are solar energy. Solar energy is exactly what it states. It is energy derived from the sun, which makes the source renewable and eco-friendly. It is also easy to get, as the energy comes right from the sun. It is sure to never run out, as the sun generates more energy in one day than the world uses in one year, providing this as an abundant, safe, and safe to use. The process where the sun makes energy is called nuclear fusion. It is made in the sun's core. Then through packets of light, which is called photons, it is sent 93 million miles to Earth, which takes a little over 8 minutes.
I'm Prerna Shankar, and this is my partner, Carter Beswick. We are natural gas. Natural gas is a flammable, odorless gas consisting mainly of methane and other hydrocarbons, occurring naturally underground and used as fuel. Did you know that if we were to connect all the natural pipelines around the world, its length would stretch to the moon and back almost 3 times? From this, you can see that natural gas is a widely used energy source throughout the whole world. In fact, many schools in this district use natural gas. Also, natural gas is very cost effective. It costs between 7 to 10 cents per kilowatt hour compared to coal, for example, which costs between 7 to 14 cents per kilowatt hour. Natural gas has a lot of time left as well. About 200 years is for sure as of now, but we are continually finding more natural gas sources every day. Also, though natural gas is non-renewable, it has half the emissions of coal and petroleum, which makes it one of the cleanest energy sources today.
I'm Katie Zepetti, and this is my partner, Emma Komprowski. We are geothermal energy. Geothermal energy is a form of energy that comes from heat within the earth. Water is pumped from wells deep within the earth's crust where extremely high temperatures are present. One of the best benefits of geothermal energy is the fact that it is a green, renewable energy resource. Due to the fact that rainwater in the wells is always being replenished by rainfall and the Earth's center will always be hot, there is no way for us to use up geothermal energy. In addition, geothermal energy is unlike other green, renewable energy sources like solar power, for example. Solar power is only present when the sun is out. Earth's crust is always hot, so geothermal energy can always be used, making it an extremely reliable, green, and renewable energy resource.
Hello, we are Petroleum, and this is Emily Smith and Vanessa Moline. Petroleum is a liquid that is usually yellow or black and is extracted from the earth. It is made out of stuff that was dead for a long time and composed. Petroleum is made from many things consisting primarily of liquefied petroleum gas, heavy fuel oil, and gasoline. It is used commonly everywhere. Even though it takes a long time to get to, the oils produced, it's worth it. People can buy it everywhere, so there is never a shortage. It is used in things such as gasoline, which fuels all your cars and buses and great for transportation. It's also in umbrellas, everyday things that we could just not go without.
I would like to challenge petroleum. I would like to point out that petroleum may be an easy energy source, but it's not all peachy. Along with the risk of oil spills, it is a non-renewable source and it causes water, air pollution, as well as harm to wildlife. So therefore, petroleum poses a threat to all living things. But what are you going to do when oil spills and impacts the environment forever?
This is not quite accurate. There have been new technology that has allowed us to easily and safely transport the oil. Furthermore, you also mentioned how oil spills harm the environment. Well, there are special tools, which are sponges, which have been recently made to absorb the oil and help filter it out, which helps clean up faster. Containing it and moving inward, collecting and cleaning up quicker. Solar energy may also impact the environment with visual pollution. In addition, you would also need a lot of money and room to house the solar panels.
You also mentioned that is a non-renewable research, which is true, but you do not realize that petroleum is made of dead organisms. Fish is one of the many of the leading dead organisms that contributes to the production of oil. This, in turn, gives us, the humans, incentive not to overfish.
First off, you stated that there are new ways to transport the oil, but what is that going to prevent in a vehicle oil spill? And secondly, you added that solar power impacts the environment with visual pollution, which, might I add, isn't lowering the survival rate of the world. Petroleum, on the other hand, pollutes the environment visually and non-visually. For example, oil spills permanently damage the environment, whereas someone can easily remove a solar panel. You also added that you need a lot of money for solar panels, but that is not particularly true. There are people and companies out there that can help you in purchasing a solar panel for solar panels for your house. They can help you step by step with finding the right ones for you and the best price that will work for you. Plus, if you invest in solar panels now, your energy bill will thank you later. And space-wise, I can't assume, but most people have a house or building with a roof on it. And if you do, that's an easy way to store them. In fact, the amount of energy your building needs is often displayed by the size of your roof. So in theory, the only space you'll need to power your solar panels is your roof. Finally, to finish this up, you stated that dead fish contribute to the making of petroleum, but I'd like to point out that this process takes millions of years. So what exactly is that doing for us today?
All right, so we are geothermal and we are going to be challenging natural gas. First and foremost, natural gas is not a renewable energy resource. It takes many thousands of years to create natural gas, and we are using it at a much faster rate than it is being produced. In fact, if we continue to use it at the same rate we are today, there will only be 93 years left of natural gas. Furthermore, the process of creating, transporting, and using natural gas is unsafe and is bad for the environment. Fracking, the process used to extract gas from the grounds, is unsafe. During the process, there is a high possibility of groundwater contamination due to the chemicals being injected wells. This is just one of the many environmental downsides. There is also detrimental consequences if the machinery used to transport, store, and use this gas fails. Explosions and gas leaks are highly likely and expected because pipes are found virtually everywhere. Actually, we use 100 billion cubic feet of natural gas per year just because of leaks. We lose that. In 2010, a massive pipeline explosion in California leveled a neighborhood and killed 8 people. And the possibility of these leaks and explosions become even more likely as the pipes age. In New York City, they refer to the natural gas pipelines as ticking time bombs.
In addition to the fact that creating this energy produces powerful greenhouse gas emissions, there is a risk of methane, a toxic gas, leaking. Methane leaks are extremely dangerous because methane has no distinct smell, so there is no way to tell when it is leaking. Last year in Southern California, 100,000 tons of methane got leaked from the Aliso Canyon facility. Natural gas isn't found everywhere. Unfortunately, as of right now, the main sites for drilling this energy source are found in countries with some of the worst dictatorships, such as Saudi Arabia. Buying this gas then puts thousands of dollars directly into the hands of some of the most dangerous governments in the world. In fact, Osama bin Laden comes from one of the richest Saudi families.
Hi. Hi. Again, we are natural gas, and I am Carter. To rebut what they said before, you said that we had 93 years left of natural gas, but in reality, we have 200 years left at our current rate of usage, and we are constantly finding more, so it is likely that it will last much longer than those 200 years. And since you said that it was expensive to put the pipes in, and since the price has already been paid for the pipes to put them in, you will not have to pay for that. So the cheap prices of natural gas will outweigh the prices of the pipeline. And you said that it has no distinct smell to it when it comes out of the ground, and that is true. But right at once it comes out of the ground, a chemical called mercaptan is added, which has a distinct smell like rotten eggs. So you will know when it's leaking so you can get it fixed. And according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, while natural gas power plants only cost an average of $965 per megawatt hour to build, geothermal power plants cost between $2 to $7 million for 1 megawatt of geothermal energy. And according to the Geothermal Energy Association, the cost of a new geothermal power plant is higher than any comparable natural gas facility. Not to mention, geothermal energy is very hard to scale compared to natural gas. It is very hard to scale because a lot of the infrastructure for natural gas is already in place, like pipelines and power plants. Natural gas already powers 24% of the world's energy and has the capacity to power more. On the other hand, geothermal combined with biomass only powers 1% of the world's energy needs. Even in the areas where it is used the most, like Iceland and the Philippines, only 1/3 of their energy needs are suited by geothermal energy. As a result of this, it would be very hard to scale and very expensive to bring this throughout the whole world. Not to mention, it is very hard to bring into existing homes because in order to bring the energy there through pipes, there is large-scale excavation that needs to happen. So it can only be used in new housing developments, which makes it hard to scale worldwide. And the installation of these pipes through the ground can also cause lots of damage to tree roots and rodent tunnels, which can be very expensive to repair.
Another thing that I want to add is that earthquakes can be caused by geothermal power plants. According to PlantSafe.com, geothermal plants can make the land around them unstable and they can cause harm to the environment. In 1997, a plant in Switzerland caused a magnitude 3.4 magnitude earthquake on the Richter scale, and it caused lots of damage to the surrounding area and property. Also, you need suitable lakes and reservoirs for geothermal energy, and we are running out of places to put these plants, which adds to the fact that geothermal energy is not going to be used that much in the future as well.
Not to mention, according to the article Environmental Impacts of Geothermal Energy, the plant's heat pumps need considerable quantities of electricity for their operation, and they contain refrigerants of very high greenhouse potential. And if they leak into the environment, the environmental impact can be devastating to the environment. Yeah, that's it.
Well, natural gas is actually expensive, and the pipelines are not cheap. These pipelines cost $2 to $4 million per mile, and there are over 300,000 miles of interstate and in-transit transmission pipelines and 2.1 million miles of distribution pipelines. These prices can add up very quickly, and it is thought that geothermal energy is extremely expensive to install, but it's actually about the same as natural gas, since natural gas has been around for so many years, and the high costs for installations are already been paid. And geothermal can pay itself off in 5 to 10 years.
And even though you said that the pipelines are already installed, like we said before, as they age, they have a higher possibility of leaking and causing explosions. So they will need to be re-put in.
And you said that it can't work in old homes, but that's actually not true. Geothermal is suitable for all types of homes and can work in all homes, and so there's no need for large-scale excavation. And also, you don't use lakes, so there wouldn't be no problem with that.
And you also brought up the chance of greenhouse gas emissions, but geothermal does not emit any, it has no emissions at all. Besides steam.
although you can put it in old housing developments, it does include that large-scale excavation in order to bring the heat to the houses, and that is very expensive and involves the towns being shut down for a while, and it's a lot of money. And like I said before, the pipes are already in place, and they don't all need to be taken out and repaired. There is some sections of the pipe that are getting old and rotting that need to be repaired, but a lot of the pipes are suitable and don't need to be repaired, so they're already there, so we will not need to pay that high price that you do need to pay for geothermal energy to implement it. So, to conclude, after finding out that we here at CTMS use predominantly natural gas and learning that many other schools have made the switch to more renewable energy resources, we each wrote a letter to the superintendent suggesting a new renewable energy source that we thought would be the best to fuel our school. And we had to use various reasons and evidence to support our claims. This is the letter that I wrote to the superintendent. Dear Dr. Feander, Clinton Township Schools currently use mostly natural gas to supply their energy needs. We should switch from natural gas to solar because natural gas has many problems for both our school and the environment. For these reasons, our school districts should consider using solar as an alternate energy resource to natural gas. One reason we should switch to solar is because it would save the school money. It would save us money both in the long run and on taxes in the short term. It would save money in the long run because although there is an initial cost to install the panels and a small cost to maintain the panels, according to Energy Informative, they on average pay themselves off in 6 to 9 years. After this amount of time, the school would pay off these panels and keep saving because they are now getting energy for free. Just as important, the price of maintenance and installation is getting cheaper and cheaper. The price to buy one solar panel has gone down from $600 to just $300. To add on, it would save us money on taxes. For example, homeowners get 30% from 30% of their solar panels paid from the federal government and $1,000 paid from the state. The total average lifetime savings for a household is $70,766. If homeowners get this much, schools are bound to get some benefit. This benefit could give us money to spend on other things. In conclusion, our school should switch to solar energy because it will end up being cheaper than what we use now, natural gas. Another reason we should switch from natural gas to solar is because it is better for the environment and for people's safety than energy from natural gas. Natural gas is a fossil fuel which gives off lots of harmful greenhouse gases into the environment. Some of these gases include carbon dioxide, carbon dioxide, and other carbon compounds. All of these compounds are very harmful to the environment and contribute to global warming. Not to mention, in the process of getting natural gas out of the ground, thousands of pounds of methane, which is the main component of natural gas, leak into the atmosphere. According to the article, Environmental Impacts of Natural Gas, methane is 86 times stronger at trapping heat than carbon dioxide over a 20-year period. This is a huge amount of heat being trapped, making the Earth heat up a lot, contributing to global warming. Solar does not give off any emissions, which is why we should switch to it. Just as important, a lot of natural gas pipelines are eroding and leaking. Since natural gas is highly flammable and explosive, it is causing fires and explosions. According to the article, How Dangerous is Natural Gas? There are over 150 pipeline incidents a year, killing and injuring over 60 people. and causing over $30 million a year in damage. What's more is that if any of these leaks were to happen in our school, it would take weeks to repair and a lot of money. Solar does not have any of these accidents, and as a result, switching would make our school and other people safer. Another reason why we should switch to solar is because our school spaces are ideal for solar panels. We could put our solar panels on the roof and over the parking lots, or at our middle school, we can utilize the space across the street that was supposed to be used for sports fields. These are all spaces that are never being utilized and are an open space for solar panels. The solar panels over the parking lot even protect the cars from rain and snow. I know that Bridgewater Middle School put solar panels over their parking lots and is very effective at producing free energy and protecting the cars. To add on, it is a great learning tool for the kids. Many schools put up interactive panels for their students to interact with and see how much energy the panels are producing. This both interests the kids and teach them about the energy. Many people say that we should not switch to solar energy because it is intermittent and only provides the energy at certain times. In reality, it produces energy right at the times where we need it. The majority of the time we're at school, the sun is always up, and that is when the school needs most of the energy. As a result, we will almost always have energy from solar when we are at school. Many people also say that we should not switch to natural solar energy because it does not produce energy when it is cloudy or rain. These panels can still produce 25% of the normal energy on these days. It is important to remember that all of this energy they are producing is cheaper and better for their environment. In conclusion, our school should switch where it gets its energy from natural gas to solar energy because it's cheaper, better for the environment, and our school is an ideal space to do it. In the end, why wouldn't you want it to switch to free energy that will never run out?
Okay, we gotta give it up one more time for these guys who did a phenomenal job. Thank you guys so much for coming together on this and for doing an awesome job. I'm gonna move you guys up to the hallway, okay? And thank you guys for taking the time to listen to our little spiel here and see some of the things that we've been doing in eighth grade science this year.
Mrs. Dominakis and students, if I could just have your attention for just a couple seconds. On behalf of the entire Board of Education, I would like to thank you for coming out this evening and holding this debate for us. It was incredibly informative. It is very apparent to me and the rest of the board and those in the audience this evening that you've put a great deal of time, effort, and energy, no pun intended, into this particular project. You included a massive amount of information, and frankly, I know there were judges there, but I'm not quite sure how you could pick a winner. You all defended your positions exceptionally well, and you should be very proud of yourselves. To the parents of these students, I'd like to thank you for bringing your children out here this evening to present to us. They were absolutely amazing, and they truly are an extension of you and your parenting. So thank you for bringing them here tonight and sharing them with us. You should be very proud of your children and their accomplishments and all their work that they demonstrated this evening. And to Mrs. Dominakis, I would like to thank you for your leadership and all the hard work that you do with these students. Like the parents, the students are an extension of who you are in your classroom, and I think their work really demonstrates who you are to them and in the leadership you provide them. So thank you very much.
We're going to take a two-minute break here to allow the students to leave, and hopefully they don't have homework tonight, but we'll give them a couple seconds to leave the stage.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to move on to the report of our superintendent of schools, Dr. Feiner. Dr. Feiner, may we have your report, please?
Yes, thank you. During the month of March, we have an enrollment of 1,269 students. We are reporting two half-day suspensions at Round Valley School. Also during the month of March, I've been doing a lot of weather watching. And that has resulted over the course of the winter in 9 snow days that are emergency closing days that we've had. I did a little historical analysis with the help of some people in the office and the Educational Services Commission. In 2013-14, there were 7 snow days. In 2014-15, there were 7 snow days. In 15-16, there was 1. In 16-17, there were 3, and this year, 9. It never gets easy. During the month of March, we had an incredible production of Annie Jr., and we congratulate the cast and crew. It was entertaining and delightful and really exceeded my expectations for a middle school production. Director Robin Stein, music director Julie Beckman, and choreographer Ariel Rabano worked wonders with the children with snow days. And we give special thanks to Rich Tara for his special technical design with sound, backdrop, and lighting. We congratulate the PTA and CTMS for successful and fun-filled penny auction, and I won the last basket. So congratulations, PTA. Jennifer Sandoz from Round Valley told us that the 6th grade Block 6 Law Fair team earned an honorable mention, the New Jersey Bar Foundation. And they are able to go and turn the case into a script, and they'll be performing at the New Jersey Law Center in New Brunswick in May, so we wish them well. Diane McCormickan invites us to the very first CTMS Treps Marketplace, Wednesday, April 11th, from 6 to 8. You want to come and see what the entrepreneurs are up to. And finally, March marked the arrival of Mary Constance Hill, daughter of Jason Hill, Round Valley Music School teacher, on March 19th. That is my report for the month of March.
Thank you, Dr. Feiner. I'm looking for a motion, please, for 18-SU026 to 18-SU028, please.
Motion.
Mrs. Radogada. Second, please.
Second.
Second, Dr. Foy. Any questions for Dr. Feiner this evening on her report? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Radagada.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. I just want to review very quickly the process for creating a school budget. Tonight is Dr. Feiner will give the preliminary a presentation on the preliminary budget for the 2018-19 school year. School budgets, including Clinton Township School District's budget, are developed, approved, and implemented with a significant number of ongoing checks and balances. The annual school budget is not developed and presented and approved in a silo. A school district is held accountable to develop, approve, and implement an annual budget by members of the Board of Education, our community, the Executive County Superintendent, the New Jersey Department of Education, and by auditors that specialize in education. This evening's preliminary budget hearing serves as a culmination of a long and arduous process that the district administrators and Board of Education follow each year in order to develop, propose, and gain approval from the members of the Board of Education, the Executive County Superintendent, and the New Jersey Department of Education. The process to develop the 2018-19 budget began this past fall with the administration, staff, and members of the Board of Education identifying and prioritizing specific needs in the classroom, the needs of our facilities, and our operational needs. Board committees like our Facilities and Finance Committee, Policy and Curriculum Committee, and our Personnel Negotiations Committee met many times to discuss and prioritize needs for the district within their committees' areas of responsibility. Dr. Feyander, our Superintendent of Schools, and Mr. McManus, our Business Administrator, took the input provided by members of each committee and members of our staff and developed a preliminary budget. Each committee reviewed the needs of the district that needed to be included in the 2018-19 budget. The Facilities and Finance Committee then reviewed the preliminary budget and recommended that the Superintendent and Business Administrator present it at tonight's monthly board meeting. Therefore, tonight, the 2018-19 preliminary budget was presented by Dr. Feyander. And when the presentation is completed, members of the Board of Education will ask any questions that they may have regarding the proposed budget. Members of the public will be permitted to ask questions relative to the preliminary budget presentation during the first recognition of the public on agenda items only. The full board will vote whether or not to approve the preliminary budget during the Facilities and Finance Committee portion of this meeting. If the board approves the preliminary budget, it will be sent to the Executive County Superintendent for approval by the end of business on March 27th of 2018 for his review and modification if necessary and approval. The district should hear back from the Executive County Superintendent by April 15th of 2018 as whether or not he will approve the preliminary budget. If he approves this budget, then the district will target the advertisement of the proposed budget by April 18th of 2018. On April 30th of 2018, the board will hold the annual formal budget hearing at 7:30 here in the CTMS auditorium. At that time, Dr. Feyander will present the final budget to the board and the community. Once again, members of the board and members of our community will have an opportunity to ask questions regarding the proposed budget. The board will vote whether or not to approve the budget on that evening. Upon final approval of this budget, it will then be submitted to the New Jersey Department of Education. The checks and balances do not stop after the budget is approved by the board. The State Department of Education reviews the budget. Then the Executive County Superintendent conducts a mid-year review of the budget annually. The district's budget is also reviewed by auditors that specialize in education twice a year, and the auditors provide an audit report, which is also made available for the public for review. These are the steps that take place each and every year with the district school budget. This process provides proper oversight and ensures that a budget is effective and responsive. So at this time, I'd like to ask Dr. Feyander to please present the preliminary budget.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to do this. It's been a lot of work, and the Finance Committee, the chair is Kevin Malloy, Lana Brennan, Maria Grant, and Alyssa Lasky have spent a lot of time with us putting this together, and it's called a preliminary budget. There still may be changes, and that will take place maybe at the county office or maybe some information that comes to us along the line. So it continues to move until the county office approves it and the board approves the final budget in April. Our agenda tonight is to present a clear and accurate overview of the district's budget and to answer what's included in it and what are the implications to the resident taxpayers. Our agenda will include revenues, state aid and other revenues, expenditures, budget highlights and budget details, and tax levy information from the general fund and the debt service. In the district, the district continues to see a declining enrollment, which is a trend across the nation. And since 2010, we have had a decline of 533 students. Our state aid components consist of, is that me?
Sorry, that's me.
Consists of school choice, transportation aid, special education aid, security aid, park readiness and per pupil growth aid, which are not being given this year, additional adjustment aid, professional learning community aid, which is not being given this year, and additional adjustment aid. If you look at the first column, that's fiscal year 18. That's the year we're in right now. In fiscal year 19, you can see the differences. When you get to the bottom line, it's really relatively flat. The state has a means called hold harmless. So we're basically seeing exactly, give or take $926, the same state aid. Along with state aid, there are other revenues that come to the district to manage its budget. There's the tax levy. There's tuitions from parents who send children here. There's tuition from Lebanon Borough and two special ed students who come to our district. There's miscellaneous building use revenue when people rent the facilities from us. There's interest on capital and maintenance reserve accounts. There's the state aid again that I talked about earlier. There's something called extraordinary aid. Fund balance, if we choose to apply money from the year-end balance to the next year. There's a maintenance reserve account, which we're choosing this year to add into to do maintenance projects, and that's a reserve account. There's Title IIA, IDA Basic, and debt service. When you total all those together from the current year compared to what we anticipate our budget to be, there's a difference of $188,481 in total aid. And if you want to talk like a household, that's the money you take in, and the expenditures are the money you spend. And that's what a school budget is like. So that's the money we anticipate taking in for the next fiscal year. In expenditure history, you can see that the district has, as it's declined enrollment, in FY15, it was about a $32 million budget. FY16, it spiked at 34, and then it's been declining ever since. From a 7.26% increase to a 6.34 decrease, 7.96, which is estimated. We're still in this calendar year, so these are estimates. And then finally, what we propose compared to what we estimate, a continued decrease in overall expenditures. And there's just a graph view of it. The budget highlights, which is the important part we talk about, is what do we do with our money? We, of course, support curriculum, programs, technology. We're looking very seriously at increasing our security measures. And then we also have to consider financial considerations and constraints. In the general fund increases, we have employee benefit costs that will have a significant impact. They're estimating 18% for a calendar year. Special education private school tuition costs are forecasted to double this next year. Legal fees are increasing. This is due to special education cases, unilateral placements, contract negotiations, and deliberations with the township, to name a few. We have negotiations with the local collective bargaining group. It's in process, so we don't know exactly what those increases will be. We have substitute teacher costs, which were under budgeted this year, and so we're trying to get that at a reasonable place. And again, school security is a priority, and we're allocating funds for important projects. For those of you on the staff, you know that many of the initiatives we have are expanding student learning resources. NJTSS, School Ride Resources, STEAM, Moby Max, Fact Fluency. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. You know all of these things. They're very important. We're very excited that Teachers College Columbia will continue to do our professional development for K-8 staff. In technology initiatives, we're going to continue to refresh and replace Chromebooks. We want to give Chromebook access in the fifth grade through CART so that they are available in the CARTs, and we're looking to continue to build the design lab at Round Valley School, which is another word for makerspace. School security measures include a full security audit for the entire district, fixing public address upgrades that are needed in some of our buildings, and the swipe card access, which is taking place now. Some of the financial constraints we're seeing are anticipated healthcare costs. We're looking at 18% in 2019 calendar year, 8% in prescription benefits, 8% in dental benefits. And again, I mentioned to you the special education out-of-district placements. We currently have 4. We anticipate as many as 9 next year. And the collective bargaining is in process. So the preliminary budget details will show the increases for health benefits at 8.72%. Out of district tuition is a whopping 212% anticipated increase. Legal fees a 25% over what we anticipate for this current year, for next year. Substitute teachers a 43% increase, a 64% increase in school security funds, and negotiated settlements to be determined. Some of the decreases we're seeing in this anticipated budget is in general supplies, and that spans over the entire district. And we felt that some of that was over budgeted. So we think this is keeping in line with what we will be spending and not being over budgeted. In the superintendent's office, we are seeing a 25% decrease. Cleaning, maintenance, and repairs, a 25% decrease. And overall staffing positions, that's to be determined, but we anticipate 4 to 5 through attrition and other means that will be reduced. Tax rate information, this is how it affects the local residents. The general fund tax levy is 1.5%, which is under the 2% budget cap. So the board is looking at a 1.5% increase as opposed to the full 2%. The general fund tax levy is going to increase by $147,177 over the current year. The tax rate from last year is 1.5 cents increase. So basically, as a homeowner, this is an increase for the general fund of $58 for the average assessed home in Clinton Township of $385, which is a monthly rate of $4.83. That's for the general fund. The debt service fund is what's used to pay off the building referendums, and the tax levy is $2,106. It's a difference of $398,000, right?
That's right.
Yes, okay, I thought so. $398,000 from 2017-2018. What happened last year was there was additional funds left over from a referendum. The board was able to take that debt service and apply it to the debt service tax levy. That was in the amount of $391,723. So that reduced it last year. We don't have that option this year. That was a one-time opportunity. So this year's tax rate, the current year was 0.079 per 100 of assessed valuation. Next year it will be 0.096. Again, this current year we had the break with the being able to apply that $391,000 in funds. When you combine the two, you see the overall general fund and debt service is 1.155 per 100,000. This current year anticipated to be 1.187. Next year, a difference of 0.032. And that's the slide explaining what I just said to you. Except we need more zeros. The primary general fund tax rate from this year is increasing by 1.5 cents, and this seems to be in there twice, so it's $58 for the average assessed home evaluation, and that's approximately $4.83 for the general fund tax rate. And our next steps, as Mrs. Grant already outlined, we submit to the tentative budget for review. The targeted date for the approval is April 15th. You also should get your taxes paid by then. And the targeted date for advertisement is April 18th. And the next board meeting is April 30th, where there will be a formal hearing, perhaps with more details, and the formal budget approval by the board.
Thank you, Dr. Finder.
You're very welcome.
Any members of the board have questions for Dr. Finder relative to this preliminary budget presentation this evening?
I do. I have a couple of questions. On the enrollment projections, is that just anticipated negative first grade replacement? That's how you got the 84 number?
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
On the enrollment projections, how did you predict that? Is that based on negative first grade replacement? You know, the graduating eighth graders versus the incoming?
It's moving everybody up a grade.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't see any numbers through the packet on our class average size. So are we still within state averages? We used to get a printout that had per section what the...
Right, can I stop you for a minute? Mr. McManus, would you write down every question I'm being asked so that I can do a Q&A? I just want to be sure I come back and put that in any document. And it's, are we staying within... Yes. In some cases, we're below, but we're not exceeding them. No.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure when we're...
Yes. And I think we talked about that in a couple of committee meetings. We're looking at the class sizes based on the enrollment and how that breaks. I know parents do not birth children in the right order, so sometimes they come and we have to keep a section, but we'll keep an eye on it.
Okay.
Oh, one second, Rachel. It's in the enrollment tab. It's like the third page.
She's looking at it.
Oh, yeah, so you have it. We have the class. Oh, you just have the class amounts, not the total sizes.
It doesn't give us averages. All right. The other question I had was, I noticed the large increase in substitute teachers. Do you attribute that to, are we having issues with attendance rates of staff, or is that too many, like,
no, it was under, it was under budgeted over previous years, is my understanding. Is that correct, Mr. McManus?
Absolutely,
yes.
Yeah.
It was under budgeted for some reason.
Under budgeted. They need way more money in that line item. And so you'll see, the board will see additional transfers by the end of the year, because traditionally May and June will be even a higher month with substitute teachers.
So then, Mr. McManus, to confirm that the average use of substitutes year over year is not changing?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions for Dr. Finder this evening? Seeing none, Dr. Fiander, I want to thank you and Mr. McManus for all of your hard work on this budget. I'd also like to thank Mr. Malloy, Ms. Solowski, and Ms. Brennan, part of the Facilities and Finance Committee as well, for all of their hard work. And for each of the remaining committees, Policy and Curriculum and Personnel Negotiations, for their work on this budget as well. So thank you to all. I have a couple more comments for President's, for the section on President's comments, and then we'll open up the floor for public comments on agenda items only. I want to talk a little bit about negotiations. As many members of our Clinton Township community are aware, the Board of Education and the Clinton Township Education Association, the CTEA, have been engaged in a collective bargaining process and are working diligently to come to a contract settlement. Any labor agreement must ultimately balance the needs of the students, our staff, and our taxpayers. Current economic realities, including continuing increases in healthcare benefits, a high increment salary guide cost, and constraints of a 2% general fund tax levy cap on our budget, are providing many challenges for both the board and the CTEA. The board is fully committed to finding a mutually acceptable agreement within the most effective time frame possible, bearing in mind the vagaries of two-party negotiations. Once again, the board, as we've always done before, would like to reiterate our highest level of respect for our entire staff and our strong desire to deliver resources that address their needs. I want to take a moment and provide an update on where negotiations stand as of today. As many members of our community know, we've been in this negotiation process since December of 2016. And unfortunately, negotiations have stalled with no movement on many topics for quite some time. As a result, on February 1st, 2018, the Board of Education filed impasse with the Public Employees Relations Commission, also known as PERC, in regards to negotiations with the Clinton Township Education Association. The definition of impasse is when two parties engaged in attempting to negotiate a mutually acceptable contract are no longer able to reach an agreement without assistance from a neutral party, and therefore no progress has been made. The board feels that it will be beneficial to have a neutral party, a mediator, help lead this negotiation towards a mutually beneficial agreement. Before impasse can be formally declared by PERC, and before a mediator can be assigned, both parties are asked if they agree that impasse has been reached and that there is a need for assistance by a mediator to move negotiations forward. Both the board and the CTA's representative agreed that impasse had been reached between both parties. The board's notice of impasse is in no way a punitive act against the CTA or diversion tactic, but rather a request for a qualified third-party expert from PERC to help us reach common ground for assistance in improving the relationship between the board and the CTA, and help both parties work cohesively together to reach a final agreement. The action of impasse has proven successful
during the recent negotiations between the board and the Clinton Township Administrators Association. The board declared impasse during that negotiation. A mediator was assigned from PERC to assist both parties come to a mutual agreement, and after just one mediation session, an agreement was reached. The board's hope is that with help from a neutral party, a mutually acceptable agreement can quickly be constructed and agreed to. On February 8th of 2018, PERC assigned a mediator, and a date was set for the mediator to sit down with both parties and begin working towards an acceptable agreement. At the beginning of the mediation process, the mediator recognized that he had a conflict of interest with one of the party's representatives and therefore needed to recuse himself from this mediation process. The very next day, on February 13th, the mediator informed PERC that he had a conflict of interest and could not continue to mediate this collective bargaining process. A new mediator has been assigned, and he was assigned to both parties on March 19th of this year. Both the board and the CTA are waiting for the newly assigned mediator to contact our representatives and provide potential dates when we can sit down and begin negotiating with his assistance. The board is eager for the mediation process to begin so that we can quickly arrive at a mutually beneficial and acceptable agreement with the CTEA. As this collective bargaining process continues, we will provide updates at a level of detail that we are legally permitted to do so by law. I'd like to take one moment to talk about an educational document that the board has released on the district's website. Often at board meetings and as board members move through our community, we are asked many questions regarding negotiations with the CTEA. Questions regarding the collective bargaining process are often posted on social media as well. And in response to questions and to help provide as much accurate information as legally permissible, the board conducted a presentation on Monday, February 26, 2018, entitled Considerations in Negotiations, a review of preparation, process, and current economic circumstances facing New Jersey public school districts in negotiations. During the presentation, experts in the area of labor negotiations, healthcare benefits, contract negotiation processes, statistics, negotiation law, healthcare benefits, provided an update on the current negotiation between the board and the CTEA. That evening, most of the questions that the board fields regarding negotiations were also answered. Since that time, the board has received some additional questions regarding the collective bargaining process. And as a result, a document has been written to serve as a longer supplement to that presentation. This document covers the questions answered during the February presentation and additional questions that were not answered that night or new questions asked of the board since then. The document is constructed in a question and answer format and is organized in four different categories. Category one, or section one, provides questions that fit into a category called overview of collective bargaining process and negotiations. The second category are questions relative to general and financial considerations involving the budget and negotiations. The third category reviews the Clinton Township Education Association's employee benefits. And the final category provides questions in the area of current negotiation update. Each question is listed and has an active link to it. So in order to get an answer to the question, you just to press on the question and the answer will reveal itself. This document, as I mentioned before, is available on the district's website, and a link to that document will be included in the Board of Education's March newsletter. I have up here, which we can pass out at the end of the meeting, a list of those questions and how they are categorized into the four areas that I mentioned a moment ago. Moving on to the final section of President's comments. Last month, the ad hoc committee for the feasibility of closing a school reported that a definitive answer on whether the district will consolidate the buildings that we have from 4 to 3 by the end of May or the beginning of June. We are still on track to make a recommendation to the full board at that particular time. And this concludes my comments for this evening. I'd like to now open the floor to our first public comment section on agenda items only to guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual by our bylaw 9322 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow everyone to be heard in a fair and consistent and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This too is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board on agenda items only at this time, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes.
Good evening. Christine Lodato, the co-president of the Education Association, and I'm also a fourth grade teacher at Round Valley. There are a few things that we feel need some clarity since being brought to the public's attention about negotiations through statements either made by board members or posted on the district's website. We ask our board to share with this audience and the media here tonight why we had to file an unfair labor practice with PERC in order to force the board to have a negotiations conversation with us. Filing the ULP forced the board to begin negotiating with us, but not until we agreed to meet and set up a list of core values, which we did. We asked our board to share why the CTA almost had to file a second unfair labor practice with PERC, because the board was withholding the necessary financial information requested by the CTA. Much of the information that was requested by our team was presented to the public last month. Why wasn't this information shared with our negotiations team when we asked for it repeatedly for months? Instead of coming to the table and giving us this information, you filed for an impasse that we did not know about. We did not know about it until our representative Fred called and said, the board filed for an impasse, and we were caught off guard. And many of us found out through the public statement that you sent to the parents also. So no, Ms. Grant, we had no idea that you were filing for the impasse. It was not a joint filing. The board indicates that this is in no manner a punitive act towards the CTA or a diversion tactic, but rather a request for a qualified third party expert from PERC to help us reach common ground. We met with you in September and October of 2017 to reach that common ground as part of our core values meetings. If you want assistance in improving our relationship with the board, come to the table and negotiate rather than grandstand via public statements and misleading letters. On behalf of our membership, we can ensure the entire board and this community that the 200 plus educators of the Clinton Township Education Association have no reason and no desire to stall this process. We can assure you that our own families are dependent on us reaching a resolution. The Clinton Township educators want to affirm our commitment to our students and our community. We love our jobs. We love our schools. Many of us live in this district and are your neighbors. Many of us are or have family members that are Clinton Township graduates. Many of our children have attended or currently attend school here. It is unfortunate that we find ourselves trying to negotiate with an unwilling and uncooperative board. So we ask the board to actually do the job that your community elected you to do. Stop delaying, start negotiating, and let's get this done.
My name is Stephanie Fletcher. My address is 31 Summit Court. Good evening. I stand here again to implore the Board of Education to settle this contract with our teachers. Since I stood here last time, Mrs. Caruso and my daughter's class have gone to the Liberty Science Center, turned reading groups into book clubs, learned fractions and decimals, managed fire and lockdown drills, helped rowdy boys become a lot less loud and better listeners, and something that no other job requires, figured out how to implement missed lessons from snow days into other mandatory lessons, since realistically, every teacher knows that half the class won't be there for the makeup days. Mrs. Ferry has also managed kindergarten fire drills, multiple party cancellations which required last-minute lesson plan adjustments, many behavior and learning accommodations, help students teach each other about their favorite activities. My son taught about karate, and from another student he learned about cartwheels, which is something he would never learn from me. She also has done all of this with an injured back from the never-ending snowstorms, and all of that and more in addition to the regular school curriculum. But I ask you, my elected Board of Education, what have you done to settle this contract? What have you done to ensure my children continue to be educated by the best and the brightest teachers, by teachers who feel valued by their board and their administration, by teachers who year after year have proven themselves to this community, by teachers who are working tirelessly to complete a curriculum amid snow days and contract tensions? Perhaps you can address these concerns in another 90-minute presentation like last month. Maybe you can bring all your attorneys back again to present to this audience. I'm sure they appreciate the additional work, which makes me wonder, how much has our board spent on legal fees during this negotiation process? How much did our board get charged for the preparation and presentation at last month's meeting? How much time and effort did your attorneys and or district administration provide for all the slides and documents posted on the website? Because to me, I would rather such resources go to the children of this community. If our superintendent and board secretaries are dedicating any time of their day helping you spread your fake news or managing around your delay tactics, then they are not spending the time working to benefit the students and teachers who truly deserve their attention. Mr. McManus, I'm submitting an open public record access request to you tonight because I do believe that taxpayers and educators have a right to know how much money we are paying attorneys on matters involving negotiation, presentations, and associated roadblocks. As I stated last month, I expect my Board of Education to do a job. If they can't, please step aside and let someone else who can.
Hello, my name is Catherine Osello, although you might know me better as Catherine Kirk, and I am here to speak as a former student and substitute teacher of Clinton Township School District. Growing up in this district, I witnessed firsthand the hard work and dedication of our teachers and the sacrifices they made for their students. In fact, I see many of them here tonight. And before I continue, I would like to thank them for what they've done to help me achieve my goals. I am now an occupational therapist working with special needs students at a school in New York City. The special needs field is very close to my heart because of my sister Emily, who was a student with learning disabilities in this district. Emily is now 18 years old, a graduate of North Hunterdon High School, and is doing incredibly well. My parents will tell you that Emily's success is due in large part to the great care, specialized instruction, and first-class education that she received as a student in the Clinton Township School District. When Emily was in preschool, my parents learned that many other families moved to Clinton Township to enroll their children in this outstanding school district. It was clear to my family that education was the number one priority in this district at that time. There was a sense that the teachers were respected and held in high esteem. My family felt that the boards of education at that time valued the quality of education, and worked with the teachers to come to mutually beneficial agreements. This in turn benefited everyone, especially the students, like me and my sister. I urge the Board of Education to make the education of our students their number one priority once again. I also urge the board to reinitiate a good working relationship with the amazing teachers that this district is blessed to have. Knowing so many of them personally, I can assure you that they are willing to meet with you and come to an agreement. Please settle now, and thank you for your time.
Hi, my name is Penny Perez McFadden. I'm a speech language specialist working in the Round Valley School and the co-chair of the CTEA's negotiation team. Before coming up to the microphone tonight, I reflected on the events of the past month and what occurred here at our last Board of Ed meeting. I even took to heart the suggestion of listening to the audio recordings of last month's meeting and some of the comments made by the members of this community. The overwhelming message that was being conveyed to the board was one of frustration. The board cannot refuse to fully engage in the negotiation process and then claim foul when teachers and other members of the community express their frustrations. It is frustrating for teachers to yet again take another pay cut due to our expired contract. It is a fact that the teachers of this district have worked 4 of the last 5 years with an expired contract. Every year we work with an expired contract, our salaries stay the same, but our responsibilities towards our healthcare premiums go up. In other words, the take-home pay of teachers and staff goes down every year we work with an expired contract. Surely, the board can understand how frustrating that can get year after year. As I stated last month, I am confused how the fault of that situation can be laid at the feet of the people that such actions or inactions deem to disenfranchise. Another frustration being expressed to the board is how the members of this association are being unfairly portrayed in a negative light. I have been at the few negotiation meetings that have taken place, and I would like to state for the record that every member of the CTEA negotiations team has and continues to conduct themselves in a respectful manner. That being said, I sincerely believe that if all this effort to inform the public about the process was actually put into negotiation, we would have a settlement now. Please help stop all this nonsense. Let's get back to the table and reach an agreement. That is what our teachers and our community want to see happen. As one of the presenters stated last week, this contract will be settled. The board has the power to turn the situation around. I stand here tonight to express again that the members of the CTEA want to settle a fair contract with the board. Nothing more, and definitely nothing less. Thank you.
My name is Sandy Engelhart. I live at 15 Skyview Garden Road. I have 3 children that go to the Clinton Township School District. I have a daughter in Ms. Newgarden, Ms. Snyder's second grade class. I have a daughter in Ms. Klaus's kindergarten class and a son in Ms. Rainey's pre-K class, and I really hope he's not the reason she's retiring. But my children have excelled so much this year And this is our first year in the Clinton Township School District, and it's very disheartening and upsetting to see these teachers. I am a member of the PTA, I am class mom to all three of my children, I am frequently in and out of the building. Everybody in the front offices of these schools know who I am just from me being there all the time. I see how hard these teachers work every single day. And I know you guys sat here and said, oh, we respect you guys and we really know how hard you work, but honestly, you really need to try harder. You need to show up to these meetings. You need to have these meetings and show these teachers that they deserve everything that they're asking for. I know that's probably not gonna happen, but I feel that they deserve it, and I'm here as a parent to show my support for all the teachers in this district. Thank you.
You good? Hi, I'm Maureen McSweeney. I live at 15 Foxfire Lane. I have two daughters that are in seventh grade. I came to express my support for the teachers also, because my kids have done so well in the school system and everybody's been so great. I have just become involved in this, so I understand there's a lot of animosity back and forth. I really believe everybody on the Board of Ed wants the best for the kids. Everybody here wants all the best for the kids. That's the purpose of us all being here, is to want the best for the kids. So part of living in Hunterdon County, as they say, is one of the richest counties in the whole country. We do well in our park tests. We have all the home values. We're Blue Ribbon School. We do all the stuff that for our children, to make everything great for our children. When I go back and I know nothing about any of the negotiations because everything's quiet. So just this afternoon as I'm Googling stuff, I look on the State of New Jersey Department of Ed. It's a taxpayer's guide to education. I just scroll down Hunterdon County. Our teachers are the worst paid almost in the county, let alone in the state. So Glen Gardner's more, North Hunterdon Voorhees is more, Tewksbury's more, Hunterdon Central's more, Reddington's more, Lebanon's more, Highbridge is more. You pick all the different stuff and everybody's salary's better than them to start with. And if you were just picking random salaries, because again, they don't give them to you. So if you guessed you had 300 teachers in the school system, they say the average is $70,000, so that would be $21 million for the budget. If they wanted a 2% increase, that would be $420,000. If you gave them a 3.5% increase, which would be better, the difference between the difference is $315,000. So all this fighting that's been going on for years with no contract and double attorneys that have to be present every single time there's a meeting and a mediator and all of this other stuff going back and forth, not to mention the hostility, which obviously you can feel, even though everybody wants the best for their kids. We're working so hard to make ourselves better. Everybody should be working towards the kids. There's so much fighting over this and that. And I know you respect the teachers. You've all had kids that are in their classes. You know they could do a good job. So the township and the mayor is taking you guys and making you guys the bad guy, fiscally responsible for all this stuff, pitting you against the teachers. So you two are pitted against each other over money that they deserve. On the outside, it just blows my mind as you're looking about these numbers. So if you took that $315,000 that was the legal fee and you split it up over, about the 5,000 houses that are in Clinton, it would raise everybody's tax dollars $63. So we have years worth of negotiation and tons of fighting for $63, which nobody in Clinton Township would have an issue raising money for the thing. So I just think there's so much to consider, and I respect our teachers, so I'm here because I respect our teachers, but I think both sides are getting played a bit. And if you had the eighth graders do it, like when my daughters last year were in the legal team, they did a mock trial and they settled the whole thing, I'll bet you could have those eighth graders that were here tonight in the energy group with nobody here and no people, and they could solve it. Between representing one side and representing the other, not back and forth, but I think that there could be a little more neutralness and they could solve. Time's up, sorry.
Thank you.
going to change it up a little bit. I'm Faith Furman. I'm the school nurse at Spruce Run. I'm a resident of Clinton Township on Cobblestone Lane. I noticed tonight that one of our best teachers is resigning, Rainey Duell. And I know in other board meetings, we've recognized teachers for their service. And I'd like to think that that was going to happen, but I'm not sure, so I'm doing that now. She's not here, but we will feel a void at Spruce Run. She has been a preschool teacher since my kids were old enough to be in preschool. They didn't get to come here for that, but she is part of the glue that's holding us together. And we are losing a lot of our teachers of her quality. And I don't think we should let that impact go unnoticed. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Dr. Fyander, can you address
that? I would like to address that. First of all, we could not acknowledge Rainey Duell enough. She's an amazing, amazing person and educator, and we will be recognizing those who are leaving us later in the spring. But thank you for that. Thank you.
Hi, Nicole Panos, 39 Regional Road. It was brought to my attention, actually, when I saw the teachers marching at Pick Up the One Day, how little I knew about what was going on. And I will say that we moved just a couple years ago to this district because of the schools. It was the top thing we looked at when we were moving is the quality of schools, and this town ranked very high. And when we moved here, we weren't surprised. So I tried to do some, similar to one of the women who spoke earlier, I tried to do some work to find out what is happening. And of course, there's not a lot out there. I understand there is a huge increase in health benefits, in prescriptions and things like that, and that does affect the salaries. But what I wanted to stand here and say was that they deserve it. No matter what, no matter how hard, no matter how much the other things go up, these teachers deserve it. I have a kindergarten son, a pre-K daughter, and two more that will be in the system in a couple years. And I have nothing but wonderful experiences with everyone in the school. My children love going to school. They actually told me on the snow days that they would rather have school than stay home with me. And it's because of the quality of the teachers that that are in this district. So I would also like to support them and say, let's settle this as soon as we can, because they deserve it. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to go ahead.
Bill Glaser, 35 Pioneer Circle. I won't talk about the contract. I will not vilify the board. I appreciate the hard work you do. You're in an impossible situation. With the 2% cap, you're already pushing up the 1.5% of it this year. And as a taxpayer, I'm concerned. Enrollment, if I caught the numbers properly from the superintendent I made out of, continues to go down. The per pupil spending continues to go up. It cannot infinitely continue like this. It's nice to say it's $58, but that's on top of extraordinarily high taxes already. So it's not that I don't appreciate the work the board does, but it's got to end. I'm sorry. It's just the taxes are going up incessantly. The per pupil spending has gone up by double digits for many years at this point. Our enrollment is down, I think 500 kids, I think you mentioned, but the spending goes up year on year. So I appreciate what we're trying to do for the teachers. I appreciate the position you're in, and I appreciate the work you're doing to try to keep a contract that's fair to all sides.
Okay, I'd like to close the floor on public comment section on agenda items only. Open the floor on first recognition of the public. The same parameters that I mentioned a few moments ago relative to the public comments on agenda items only remain the same here. We're limiting this public comment section to 10 minutes. If you'd like to address the board, please step forward to the microphone, state your name and address.
Chuck Roberto, eighth grade language arts teacher and executive vice president of CTEA. Back in September and October, the CTEA and the Board of Education leadership met to discuss and agree upon core values. One of the values we discussed was honesty. As part of that discussion, I made a point of saying that when giving information, we should be telling whole truths. When information is being withheld, the truthful information that is given is not very different from a lie. At the last board meeting, it was presented that the projected budget increase due to health care costs for next year represents $576,246. That is undoubtedly a significant increase, especially when you consider, as you also pointed out, a 2% increase to the tax levy is $462,902. As was alluded to, it is all but impossible to meet such an economic demand. But that does not tell the whole story, the whole truth. Between the 2016-2017 and 2017-2018 school years, I extrapolated from your pie chart and budget information that there was an increase in salaries and benefits equaling $718,332. On top of that, the board allocated an additional $100,000 for a study to determine the feasibility of closing a school. The 2016-2017 tax levy was $22,813,416, 2% of which is $456,268, and yet this board managed to only increase the tax levy by 1.45%. I do understand other factors played into having that work out, but similar numbers worked out the previous year when the tax levy was reduced by 0.5%. In fact, there seems to be a historical trend that circumstances exist that make the simple numbers of salaries, healthcare increase, and 2% cap not what they seem to be. I wish I could say that I do not believe the board presented the information in the manner that it did to be deceiving. Unfortunately, this presentation came on the heels of an addendum to the filing for impasse that was filed with similar misleading information, the specifics of which were presented at the CTA meeting prior to your last board meeting. Although some did argue that some of the information that we presented is debatable, at least one point is clearly not. There was a death date given as a reason for a breakdown in negotiations. The date mentioned in the addendum is more than 6 months prior to the actual death date of our Uniserve rep. This truth cannot be refuted. As for the other meeting dates, et cetera, that were questioned, if there can be conflicting evidence shown from either side about any given piece of information, then perhaps that information should not be part of a letter that is now public record unless the conflicting evidence is also represented, thereby telling the whole truth. It was this board who wished for us to agree upon core values in order to move our relationship forward. We met, developed, and agreed the core values. The CTA has been adhering to them. We are waiting for the board to do the same.
Anyone else like to address the board this evening? No, seeing none, I'll close the floor and move on to the report of the school business administrator, Mr. McManus, sir.
And can you? One thing I'd just like to report is the next board meeting is on April 30th, and that's when the formal public budget hearing will take place.
Thank you. I'm looking for a motion, please, on action item 18BA030 to 18BA033.
Motion.
Mr. Malloy, second.
Second.
Second, Dr. Foy. Any questions for Mr. McManus this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Brooks.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Rudagata.
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Moving on to the reports of our committees. The first committee report this evening is Facilities and Finance. Mr. Malloy, would you like to give the report for your committee, sir?
Sure. Finance Facilities Committee has met twice in recent days, on March 13th and 19th, for express purposes of compiling the budget, which was summarized in the preliminary presentation that was so well delivered by Dr. Feyender and prepared, as you mentioned, Mrs. Grant, in connection with Mr. McManus, Lana Brennan, yourself, and Alyssa Lowski. So again, thanks for all that work. We did manage to get some non-budget business conducted in these meetings, and so tonight, with that in mind, we do have 14 items to move. The first and most important being FF156, which is approval of the proposed tentative budget as presented tonight. A few other items of note. There is a donation by the district of technology equipment to the New York State Boys Foundation for use in the American Legion Boys State Program. That is a civics program. There are 5 IEP lesson approvals. There is a contract approval with staff development workshops for 17 days of literary professional development. There is a note for approval of the final budget hearing on April 30th, as earlier outlined. There is an approval noted for an updated demographic study, which will be conducted for various things, most notably the ad hoc committee for feasibility of closing school. We are opening an RFP for our auditing firm. We ask for a vote on that tonight. And we also ask finally for approval on the implementation of an outside building and facilities security audit as referenced by Dr. Feyender in her presentation. So with that, I move these items. You need the numbers. So I can do that for you if you like. For the record, 18FF146 through 18FF159.
Thank you, Mr. Malloy. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, please. Any questions for Mr. Malloy this evening for members of the board?
Just a quick one.
Yep.
On the donation of the technology, is this just material that's out of spec, no longer serviceable, or how does it?
No, it's still viable, but as we upgrade, we're able to donate. Correct, Mr. McManus?
True.
So, it would be a shame to donate bad materials.
No, I'm saying that we've got a budget already for new materials coming in.
Yes, you got it. So we're actually making use of outdated, to your point. Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions this evening? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please?
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Rodagata.
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to our committee report for personnel. Mrs. Olasky is the chair of that committee. Mrs. Olasky, may we have the report of your committee, please?
Yes, you may. The Personnel Committee met once since the February board meeting, and there are 16 action items this month. Of note, there is a retirement at Spruce Run. There are amendments to prior action items 18-PN-178181 to reflect changes in the leave of absence end date. There's an approval for 2 Hunterdon County Polytech students to complete internships at Spruce Run during spring 2018. There's also an approval for a college student to be placed at CTMS for field experience during spring 2018. There's an approval for the transportation liaison job description. There are multiple approvals for teaching assistant hires for the remainder of the 17-18 school year. There are 2 approvals for home instruction and an approval for the ski club advisors. There's an approval for the theater manager payment for the February Prestige Dance Company event. And lastly, there's an approval for coverage of the Office of Human Resources responsibilities from February to April. With that, I'd like to put forth a motion for action items 18-PN-217 through 232.
Thank you, Mrs. Olasky. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Brooks. Any questions for Ms. Olasky this evening?
I have a question about the transportation liaison. I'm a little concerned with it only being 8 hours. With my understanding is the transportation liaison is someone who's there when the buses are going on. So is this someone who's going to be available to take anything that happens when the buses are running, or is this simply a position that is just taking the information? And I'm thinking more of like when things happen with the bus.
Previously, this position was a shared position, and now it's going to be its own job description.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more, Dr. Feyender?
Yes, it is currently being served by one person. We want to separate that from the human resources function, but we anticipate, given the job description, that internal applicants could apply and it could be merged as it was before, but not with human resources. But we needed to separate it out. The amount, I think, estimated hours are about what she it depends some days. There's nothing some days. There's a lot, but it would be someone who's here full-time.
Okay, so it is someone, okay.
It would be an add-on, if you will, an add-on.
All right.
Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Olowski this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call?
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
No to 220, yes to the rest.
Mrs. Olowski?
Yes.
Mrs. Redagata?
Yes.
Thank you. Mrs. Brennan?
I'd love to say no to 217, but I'll let her go. But I would like to abstain from 230, and the rest, yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Oh, I'm sorry, 231, I'm sorry.
231, okay, thank you. Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Dr. Boyd?
Yes.
And Ms. Green?
Yes to all except for 220, please.
Okay, motion passed.
Thank you. Passed. Moving on to our final committee report of the evening, policy and curriculum. Ms. McLaughlin is the chair of that particular committee. Ms. McLaughlin?
Thanks. We met on March 15th for a lengthy budget discussion. Majority of our time was spent on items that were already previously discussed tonight in the budget. We also are moving forward with a second reading of our wellness policy. We have one annual field trip through the Robotics Club to approve. And we also are doing a first reading of a new policy. Just to clarify the need for this policy, the board is very concerned about student safety. It has come to the board's attention that with declining enrollment, it's very difficult at the middle school to run teams that are effective. And as a result, some students on lower teams have been called up to play on upper teams, and then those students are being required to play on both teams, which can ultimately result in injury. In addition, certain sports need to have a certain amount of students to run effectively, in addition to making sure that we have enough students to field the team to play successfully against other schools. So we are creating a team guideline policy, realizing that declining enrollment continues to significantly impact our middle school. So this is a first reading of this policy. With that being said, I'm going to move action items 18 PC 35 through 18 PC 37.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second.
Olowski.
Any questions for Ms. McLaughlin this evening?
I just have a quick question. These are minimums, right?
It's a min and a max.
Oh, okay. So, well, I'm...
So, like, for example, if you see basketball, it has a minimum of 12 and a maximum of 15.
Okay. So, but, like, ones, like, for example, cheerleading only has 14. That's just the minimum of that.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
There could be more, but I think this is based on historic numbers as well.
Mm-hmm. Any additional questions? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please?
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Olowski?
Yes.
Mrs. Redagata?
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan?
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Dr. Foy?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Moving on to the report of our ad hoc committee for the feasibility of closing the school. We do not have a report this evening, so I'd like to move on to old business. Any board members? Mr. Malloy? Old business.
Yeah, so if you ever watch the show, pardon the interruption, they have that thing at the end, errors and omissions. Let me help out here. A few things based on what I've heard tonight. One, that the mayor and council have aligned the teachers and the board against each other. That's incorrect, and I need that read into the record. Two, that I heard tonight somebody said that members of this board have been maligning or mischaracterizing the teachers' union. If anybody in this room has proof of that, written or oral, bring it up. That is unacceptable behavior. I'm on the negotiating team. I don't think you have any, but I appreciate the emotion. And three, there was a statement that our presentation last week was somewhat misleading. Sorry if you feel that way, that's also incorrect. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moy. Any other old business for the board, members of the board this evening? Seeing none, moving on to new business. Anyone have any new business for the board? Ms. Wolowski?
I do. I had the pleasure of attending Science Night this past week, and I just wanted to tell, to say that Nicole Fava did a fantastic job of organizing all of the presenters, and she also had
food provided for all of the volunteers and the presenters, and it was really fun. The kids had a lot of different stations to go to, and they seemed to have a lot of fun doing it. It was my first time going, so
great.
I enjoyed it too.
Thank you. Anyone else have any new business?
I just had a question about our snow day consideration. Based on the numbers that Dr. Feyander gave us at the beginning, it looks like over the past 5 years, 60% of the year, or 60% of the time, we've gone over our snow days. Should we consider maybe adding a day or so or two about, so that maybe this year doesn't happen with spring break again, or maybe altering from going back on spring break? I understand it's one or the other. It's spring break or summer, which one do you want to hit? But just seeing that we've gone over more than we've actually under our snow days is my thoughts.
We can take that recommendation into committee and review it at the next committee meeting.
Thank you.
Any other new business? Seeing none, I'd like to open the floor for the second recognition of the public. Same parameters that I mentioned before apply here as well. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this section to 10 minutes.
My name is Brian Farkas. I am the data manager for the Clinton Township School District. Dr. Foy, to answer your question regarding the technology, it's stuff that we've taken out of service. Most of it's approximately 8 to 10 years old, so it's no longer out to the faculty, but it is still in working condition. Also, as a member of the New Jersey Boy State Foundation, I thank the board for your donation. This is truly Jersey Boy State, as an alumni of the program, it's truly a week that shapes the future of lots of young adults who are of high school age. Some of our notable alumni have included Supreme Court justices, former governors, and current U.S. senators. So we thank you very much for your donation, and we look forward to putting it to good use. Thank you. There's actually been a couple. So Bob Menendez was a former delegate to Boy State, and current Senator Cory Booker.
Wow.
That's
cool.
Cool. Well, thanks
thank
for
you.
Giving us
thank
some
you.
Yeah, thank you for the
perspective. Okay, I'm going to move on right now to the executive session statement. Mr. McManus, I know this is your most favorite part.
Okay. Whereas while the Senator Byron M. Beer Open Public Meetings Act requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10-4-5 sets forth 9 types of matters that may be lawfully discussed in executive session without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10-4-12 to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may be become a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer, the nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, reviewing hearing information before the board pursuant to NJSA 18A 37-13-2, at superintendent's evaluation, and whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated matters. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. I'm looking for a motion, please, to go into executive session.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? And executive session.
Yes.
No,
that's fine.
No. I'm looking for a motion, please, to reconvene the meeting.
Motion.
Looking for a second?
Second.
Oh, God. I got it. Cool.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? We are back in session. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn the meeting, please.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting is now adjourned.